You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
This is the Budget Minded Traveler Podcast, Episode 6.
Welcome to the Budget Minded Traveler Podcast, your source for the tips and tactics that will inspire and equip you to travel the world. And the best part? It won't break your bank. And now, the Budget Minded Traveler herself and your host, Jackie LaLanen.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to episode 6 of the Budget Minded Traveler Podcast today. It's a beautiful sunny day down here in Southern Baja, and I'm really excited to be bringing you this episode today because it's my second interview with a fellow traveler, and I think you'll really enjoy what he has to say. If you've ever had questions about how to afford long-term travel, you'll be especially interested in the good stuff we are getting into today. And the rock star traveler behind this interview is Neil Brown, and Neil is originally from the UK, but has been traveling for almost 2 years exactly now, and he certainly has a lot to share about his perspective of world travel and how he manages his budget and finds ways to make money while he's on the road so that he can continue this new lifestyle. And the conversation that you're about to hear is one of those that really could have gone on for hours. But for your sake, I tried to keep it close to 30 minutes. And one little housekeeping issue, we did have a bit of trouble with our connection in some spots. So you may miss a word or two, but that's because he was sitting in his camper van in New Zealand and I'm working with limited internet from the beach in Mexico. So such is the reality of traveling. So we did the best we could with Skype, and he did the best he could with trying to make his British accent as understandable as possible. All right. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Neil Brown and welcome him to the podcast. Neil, hello. How are you today? Thank you for being here.
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, feeling welcomed. I'm just sitting here in a public car park. Just looking at Lake Wanaka in New Zealand.
That's awesome. And what time is it there?
It's 7 minutes past 3 exactly. In the daytime, of course.
3 p.m. So, yeah, and I'm actually sitting down in Baja, Mexico right now, and it's 9 p.m. here and we on Saturday. So we have quite the time difference between us, but I'm glad we were able to work it out. Thanks so much for agreeing to come on the show with me.
Not a problem. It's nice to be had.
Yeah.
I feel free to ask away.
Okay, great. So let's see. I know that you are now, you've been traveling throughout New Zealand, bits of Southeast Asia, Australia, correct? For how long now?
That's correct. I think it's just coming up to 24 months, 23 and a half maybe. You sort of lose count after a while and you tend to just life pack instead of backpacking, I suppose, you know, it tends to just become one long, long trip rather than, you know, consecutive countries. So yeah, I think 23 months.
Yeah, I hear you. Since you have been traveling almost 2 years now, I guess that's when you start to stop counting the days and weeks and months. And you haven't been home at all?
No, I haven't. Sort of economically kind of doesn't make sense at the moment, you know. You're always on this sort of perpetual sine wave of a bank balance in terms of a graph form. You know, it goes up and down and up and down and up and down. It's all the money that you earn is better to be spent, and to fly home and then back out to complete the visa, which I have, would cost me about 3,000 Kiwi dollars, and 3,000 Kiwi dollars is about the extent of my bank account at any one sort of time. You know. So it makes no sense. If I'm going to go home, budget-wise, it would sort of make more sense to save twice as much and then travel home, see a few countries on the way. You know,
it doesn't mean that
I don't miss my friends and family, but I'm having too much of a good time right now to sort of think about going home. So
I love that. I love that it's actually cheaper for you to stay traveling than it is to go home. That's going to be interesting for a lot of the listeners to hear, I think, once we get into that.
Yeah, it's not as scary as it sounds.
Yeah, no, I agree. So what made you decide to leave and travel long term in the first place?
It was one of those things where it was kind of forced upon me in terms of mental state at the time. I sort of went through a bit of a breakup with a bit of girls for a good 8 years. It ended better for her than it ended for me. And I sort of had some money in the bank and did a bit more saving for 6 months, and then decided the best way to sort of to get over that was to go and sort of, like, in a cliche sense, find myself, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's sort of, I suppose a lot of people, I suppose, you actually meet a lot of people we refer to as kind of trauma travelers who have an issue here or there with partners or with family members who passed away and find that they don't feel like they really have anything else, so they go out to find those things, you know.
Yeah, or they're just ready for something.
Yeah, and I'd like to impress on people the fact that that sort of helps a huge amount, you know. And if you're in that position, then just go for it. The hardest bit really is getting on a plane, you know.
Yeah, after absolutely. Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. I've multiple times have up and left in search of new adventure, new life. And, you know, you grow every time. You learn more about yourself every time and the world around you. And it's an unending sort of thing. It just becomes addicting.
It's a very intrinsic thing. And I think a lot of people see travel or those sort of things as being a very sort of big learning curve. And it is, you know, and you do learn a lot about yourself and you learn a lot about other people as well, you know, and that's how I've learned about myself more, is through other people, you know. You see a lot of yourself in other people, and not so much the way you are now, but the way you were, you know. So, but not to get too sort of existential about those things, but that's a personal thing. So.
Yeah, but I mean, there's something there, I think, in a lot of traveler stories, so it's definitely relevant. So,
sure.
Did you when you left originally? Did you realize you were going to be gone for this long? How long had you planned on leaving for?
You get visas, and my visas when I left England extended to about 15 months of travel, I would say, and then my mental state said, "You're not going to come back after that." But who knows where you're going to go after that? Is what I was telling myself. So I have an open-ended trip, a very open-ended trip. I can see myself traveling for at least another 2 years before I go home. But even after that, you know, if I'm still doing what I want to do and what makes me happy, then there's no real reason for me to give up the lifestyle, you know.
Absolutely.
Being once a traveler, always a traveler, as they say, you know.
Yeah, and it's such a great feeling to decide to do that and to be able to just kind of go where the wind takes you. It's an incredibly freeing feeling.
Well, we all have that capability, you know. A lot of friends over the last 2 years have messaged me saying, I see your photographs, I see what you're doing, and I wish I could do that. And I'm like, and my response has always been, without sounding too sort of gung-ho about it, is you can. You know, everybody can, you know, a mortgage and a car and a job and nothing to tie you down from, you know, you can get rid of those things. In fact, you know, I think the direct translation of mortgage in French is death contract, you know.
Oh my gosh.
I always find funny. The only thing that you really does tie you down is another human being on your hands, you know. So, you know, someone you're in love with or a child, you know. Those two things, yeah, you don't have to be so self-centered about going traveling, but if you've got a car and a house, you know, they're material things. You don't really even... I live in a van. I've been living in a van for 7 months. Like,
mm-hmm.
You don't need a car or a house. But ironically, I have both at the moment. So,
well, I completely agree with you. I mean, I really like to keep my, you know, possessions, belongings, everything to a minimum. And there was a lot of years where I was just up and go, you know, throw everything in storage. I mean, having all that stuff to me is just not as important as seeing the, you know, the world often. And I mean, mm-hmm. I talked before in episode 2 of this podcast about priorities, you know, and that's really what it comes down to for me, for you, for a lot of people out there. Priority is just to travel. And, you know, we want to encourage other...
But when you do travel, people have their own... Yeah, they have their own priorities. Sorry to interrupt then.
No, that's okay.
People do have their own priorities. I mean, I know a lot of people who travel with things that I look at and go, God, I couldn't travel with those, but I'm a professional musician and I travel around with my guitar and it's a lot of times that's how I make money. And I've got a sort of cumbersome guitar that I carry around with, but you know, I still see people with like hair straighteners and hair dryers and things like that. And I think that's not what I want to travel with, but travel is a personal thing, you know, and if those things are important to you and they mean that you're going to be comfortable with what you're doing, then, you know, you can disregard a lot of things that you don't really need in life, but take things that are important to you. You know, I don't travel with any photographs or anything like that. You know, I haven't got a laptop or things like that, but there are times when I wish I did have them. But you don't, in my mind, I don't need those things, but everybody has their own personal way of traveling. That's what I'm trying to impress with that. Higgledy,
higgledy pickledy sentence there. Yeah, no, I get it. And for example, if you do have children, you can still travel with them, you know, just bring them with you. There's a lot of things.
Yeah, just
you
don't
can
take
just
them on a 24 hour bus ride for me.
Yeah, unless you're the only ones on the bus. Oh my goodness. All right. So let's get back to, there's some questions I wanted to ask you. How much money did you save before you left? I mean, did you have a travel saving, like a budget, you know, for this, or did you just kind of up and go?
I'd like to at this point personally thank the British government, because through a lot of my student loans, I managed to save rather than frivolously spend on things I didn't need. And I'd actually accrued quite a bit from my student loans. Now I wouldn't say a huge amount, but a couple of thousand English is actually quite a lot. Then after that, I took 6 months to work every job I could pretty much to make cash and actually, apart from my guitar equipment back in England, to just fund it. But one thing I learned later on in my travels is money when you leave, having a travel fund is quite an archaic way of traveling, you know. I think the best way is to save just a tiny, tiny amount to get you on your feet in whichever country you are at, buy a visa and your plane ticket out there, and then worry about money when you get there, because there's something about having no money or having a small amount of money which is, you know, quite freeing, you know. You get mm-hmm. to a country and you have no money, then you have to get a job. You have to take whatever's put in front of you. You don't think, I want a bar job or I want a restaurant job or I'd like to work on the boats. Or if you have nothing, you sort of take the first thing that comes to you, and that's the true adventure, you know.
Absolutely.
It makes happens you... to be that I've worked bar jobs, but I've, say, for example, Wanaka here, no one's employing because it's before ski season. So I've had to just take whatever comes, and that happens to be gigs and bars, music, you know, which is nice. So I'd say in terms of saving money, it's not as important as many travelers would imagine. Having no money is not an excuse not to travel. Having a plane ticket and a visa are the two most important things. After that, you will find something. You will definitely find something. I've met, in fact, the last town I was in, there was a doctor washing pans in the bar I was in. Like, you know, I think it was from Argentina or Chile or somewhere. Mm-hmm. And him and his girlfriend were just loving their lives, and he was washing pans, but he's probably the most educated person in the entire bar, you know.
Mm-hmm. And he's making it work. It definitely makes you resourceful, you know, when you
it's very resourceful, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you said that. I mean, when we, a few years ago, when my, he's now my husband, he was just my boyfriend then, but when Nate and I moved to...
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks. When Nate and I moved
to...
Yeah, I got one. To Italy, I had probably $4,000 in my bank account, and it was an open-ended trip as well. And I thought that was a lot. I mean, that included, I think we had already gotten our
one...
What'd you say?
That's a lot of pizzas.
Oh, and trust me, we ate a lot of pizzas. Oh my gosh, Italian food. But yeah, what I was going to say was we found work once we got over there, you know, and we made it work, and we didn't necessarily break even when we came home. We were definitely broke, but we made sure we had enough money for that flight home, because our trip only lasted about 6 months that time. We didn't really know how long it was going to last. So that was, you know, unplanned. But we knew we were going to go home. And the important thing is having enough money to foot the bill for that plane ticket home, you know, but you're absolutely right. I mean, once you're there, you can figure out how to make it work, and wherever there is and wherever there becomes tomorrow, you know, I mean, it can change, but you're still going to get creative about how you can be on a budget. And I love that you said that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. People are very resourceful people, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You'd be surprised too, for the listeners out there who doubt themselves. There's a lot that's available. And I mean, how, so for example, we found our first job in Rome when we moved to Italy from Craigslist, because they have Craigslist worldwide. And you usually,
yeah. And the thing is about,
I was just going to say, you usually play music. Is that right? Or have you done more traditional jobs? How have you found the jobs that you've had?
You know, when you backpack, you become part of this sort of like strange sort of ever changing community around yourself. You can have a friend one day and then not have that same friend the next day. But through social media and through the way we're globally connected at the moment, backpacking has changed a lot, I imagine. And you just network very hard, you know. Mm-hmm. Every single person you meet is a potential for a new adventure, you know, and I don't mean to sound sort of cheesy with that, but it's entirely that, you know. If I knew when I was driving into Wanaka 3 or 4 days ago, I had a friend that stayed at a campsite with, who'd already sort of sussed out the town and told me there's no chance of employment. Mm-hmm. But then I had other friends from 8 to 10 months ago who said, yeah, you need to try this place out or that place, or yeah, I manage this place, there might be a job washing pans for you, you know. You don't have to have one job.
Right.
And this is what one thing I was going to say before when I almost rudely interrupted you was that a job isn't what a job is at home when you're traveling. To put it this way, you take what you can get, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. Washing pots and pans isn't a bad thing when you're a backpacker, because everything's sort of an adventure, you know. It's not your career, it's not your path in life, it's not your vocation. But,
right.
You know, you're making $30, and that's gonna get you in the bar after work, and then you're gonna meet somebody who's gonna say, "Hey, you know, I heard you're a musician. You know, do you want to play at my bar next week, or do you want to come and hang out at my friend's house?" And he might have a bartending job for you in another town. You take what you can get, because it's a stepping stone on the next thing, you know. For example, a perfect example of this is when I lived in Brisbane. I lived with two girls, and one of them worked on the lifts for a ski season in New Zealand. And she said to me, I can hook you up with a job working on the ski season. And I said, great. Got my Kiwi visa, ended up 3 or 4 months later standing on the top of an active volcano, you know.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do that again in 3 months' time.
Mm-hmm. That's a great example. And you hit on a really good point there, that networking and speaking with other travelers, I mean, that's gold. That's gold. When you're traveling, that's where you get the best information, is just talking with other people who've been there, done that. I mean, that's what you do your whole route, you know, along your whole time that you're gone traveling. You're constantly meeting new people. You never know who you're going to meet or who they can connect you with, or what the opportunities are going to be around the next corner. So that's definitely a good,
exactly.
A good point.
And the world becomes a much smaller place when you backpack, much, much smaller. For example, like when I started, I know a lot of people I met who said, oh yeah, when I get to Australia, this is when I was in Asia, when I get to Australia, I've got family friends who are going to sort me out with a job or a place to stay and help me get my tax number and phone number and all those things. Well, I didn't really have those things. To say it, not really had them, I didn't have them at all, you know. A lot of people have got friends and family around the world, but well, my family is sort of centralized in the UK, so I didn't have that. And so networking while I was in Southeast Asia was important to sort of help me out when I got there. It wasn't sort of scary, but you do feel sort of very very, very small on a big continent like Australia is, you know. And just to have a fixed address to get a tax number sent to is the first problem you'll ever meet in a new country where you've got a working visa. And if I hadn't networked through Malaysia and met met an Australian friend, I wouldn't have even had that. So those little things that, you know, you take day by day.
Yep.
They're not problems you have at home, you know, because you know people. But to only know one person in Australia was enough for me to get started, and that's all you really need.
Yeah, and it happened for you. It worked out, and you were somewhere in Malaysia, you said, when that happened, right?
Yeah, but that's the thing. Things always work out.
Yep.
It's one thing that, you know, you lose that little bit of social anxiety that everybody has. Like, what if, what if, what if, what if? You're always asking yourself that question. What if this happens? What if it happens? Well, in Australia and New Zealand, they have a phrase which is she'll be right, which means she will be all right, obviously, without a dodgy accent. And you sort of take that with you, because everything does tend to end up okay, you know. A friend of mine has a theory that you can solve any problem with sleep or a cup of tea, you know. And with those two things, you wake up and you just get back on the horse and you try again, you know. You might not have a job, you might not know where you're going next, you might have wasted a lot of money, you know, on a doctor's appointment or a dentist appointment, and you sleep, you wake up, she'll be all right, and then it always sort of works out for some reason.
Yeah, I love, you are like embodying what I believe in. I love it. I love this conversation right now. It's so good.
Stop it. You make me blush.
Oh, okay. We'll move on. So just some fun questions, because I have to ask you. So how many countries have you been to on this trip so far?
On this trip? So Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Malaysia, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand. That's the extent so far. They're fairly common backpacking countries. I'm hoping to sort of step out of that. That New Zealand and Australia are very easy to travel in once you've been through Southeast Asia. Not that Southeast Asia was particularly hard, but I'd like to go and do sort of Eastern Bloc Europe, and I'd like to definitely do South America, put myself out of my comfort zone again, because New Zealand, to an extent, has a lot of parallels with the UK, obviously being Commonwealth, and if you took the sort of Maori away, you'd kind of be left with, you know, a more spectacular version of England. So I feel very comfortable right now, which isn't a good feeling for me personally. I'd like to feel that heartbeat of not knowing what I'm really saying in language, or what I'm eating, or who I'm talking to, or what's going to happen.
Yep. And so, I mean, South America is difficult too. It's huge. I mean, I guess Southeast Asia is pretty easy to travel through. At least that's how I found it. And places like Europe and Central America, you know, they're still close together. It's really easy to travel through those places, but somewhere like South America, that's going to present challenges in a lot of ways, especially if you don't speak the language. And I think
I already know how to order a beer in a few Latin languages, so I'm sure I'm going to get along okay.
That's good. That's what you need to know, right? And when do you play?
Yeah, well, that's the key to networking.
Yeah. Well, for you, especially if you're going to be playing in bars and such, do you have any idea when you're going to be when you're going to be heading over there?
No, but I certainly will do. My general sort of plan, and they say it, backpackers have this, they love to have this, they have this hive mind of opinions, and one of them is, oh yeah, best plans, no plan. I find that to be, you know, that's backpacker therapy. You know, everybody has these buzzwords and phrases like living the dream or YOLO and those things. But for me, that's rubbish. Everybody does have a plan. The plan's always in flux and it's always due to change. But my plan is to Japan after New Zealand in a year's time, then jump across to China, work my way through Mongolia, do the Trans-Siberian, do the Russia, then pop home just to say hello and for a cup of tea, and then hopefully I'll be doing a Canadian visa, buy a van to drive the west coast of the US, end up in Mexico, and then see South America. So it could be a good few years, yeah.
Wow, I love that plan. When you make it to the west coast, you'll have to stop through Montana, come say hi.
For sure, yeah, I'll do that. There you go. There's how to network.
Yeah, exactly. So this question, I know you've heard a million times. We all have, but it's what everybody wants to hear. What has been your favorite places that you've been on this trip?
The world, man. The world's my favorite place. No, I think it's a bit disingenuous to say of any particular country that was your favorite. I have so many great experiences from all of them. And to some extent, when a place isn't what you regard as being good, it kind of makes things better, you know, because you actually, when things are, it sounds like a bit of an oxymoron, but when things are bad, they're actually better, because you learn more about a place. Everybody
yep.
knows what's good. Everybody knows what they like. Everybody knows they like that sweet, sugary drink. Everybody knows that, you know, they like sitting on a beach looking at a sunset or a sunrise. But when you find somewhere that you don't like, I always find it very interesting to stay there longer than I really should. Because you're going to learn a lot more about yourself by staying somewhere. You learn about your dislikes, and through that, you learn about your likes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that makes sense. It kind of sounds a bit sort of... It kind of sounds a bit backwards, but maybe if you have traveled or you are going to travel, you'll either learn that lesson or you won't. If you don't like a place, stay there, is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, and actually, there's something to be said about that. I mean, you keep bringing up the word learn, and I say that a lot too, you know, like you learn a lot about yourself when you're traveling, and those experiences that you have, even if you run into a bad situation and you have to work yourself out of it, you gain so much from that, at least in my experience I have. And those have been some of my greatest travel stories, you know, was when, you know, I mean, I've had my highest highs and my lowest lows when I've been out, you know, by myself in the world, traveling somewhere and going through these situations that you can't plan in advance. And I mean, every day is an adventure and you just have to, you know, make the most of it. So.
Yeah, sure. And for sure, every day is an adventure when you're sort of fish out of water. You know, I've worked in bars long enough traveling to know that, you know, you're instantly something different. You're instantly something exotic just because you happen to have a different accent and you come from a different part of the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself is an adventure. Even if it's not an adventure for you, you know, if it's just another day at work, you're somebody else's adventure as well, you know?
Exactly.
People can sit there and talk to hours from you at a bar, you know? And just asking about, you know, what we're doing now. We're just having a conversation about what's happened in the last 2 years. And for me, it's become kind of benign and you forget how sort of lucky and you are and how much an awesome time you're having sometimes when you're just locked down in a small ski town working for 4 months. And you forget that because it's become pretty much your life day to day traveling, that you forget what you're doing is pretty awesome, you know? And you need to slap yourself sometimes and say, sometimes it just takes a 10-15 minute conversation with somebody who's just like, who's sort of bleary eyed and mouth open at all your stories to realize that you're continuing to do something very special, even if it's just an intrinsic thing, you know?
Yeah, it can be really refreshing to meet people like that and talk about that and realize that, you know, you are in a place that a lot of people wish they could be in, and being thankful for that, I guess, all the time and you know, getting the most out of it.
For sure, yeah. I mean, my day-to-day life has been, I've been living in a van up in the very far north of New Zealand, where sort of the highest Maori population is, and where the Treaty of Waitangi was signed in 1814 to sort of cement New Zealand as part of the Commonwealth, and just to say you've lived in a van for 7 months, not that it was a real challenge or anything, but people sort of go, no, you sort of lived in a van for 7 months, and it's like, you kind of forget how weird that is. You know, I've just got my little world of my own here in this metal box, and sometimes I feel like a snail. But you just kind of forget how much of a non-standard thing that is for any human being in society. But when you backpack, you've sort of stepped out of society, or selected to step out of society for a while.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point too. It's on my bucket list to buy a van and explore New Zealand, actually. So you're doing it right now. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm having a great time.
And I actually wanted to talk a little bit about your van. How did you get it? What was the driving force behind that? How did you decide to go ahead and buy the van?
Well,
is it just easy, or
let's call him by his name, Ron. We're going to go with Ron.
Okay.
He's a bit of an old man. He's from 1994. That's when he was born. He's a Mitsubishi L300 conversion, and converted by a good friend of mine, Mr. Nick Noodle. He's from the south coast of England, a bit of a surf and windsurf fanatic, and he converted it for him and his girlfriend to travel around in. Well, he's about 6'7", 6'8", or something crazy like that. And he needed something bigger, and I mentioned to him one day when I was working on a mountain with him, I think maybe in the middle of a blizzard. Let's paint a romantic story. Yeah, we were in the middle of a blizzard, and I mentioned to him that I was considering buying a van, and he mentioned that he was considering selling a van. So I said, right. I said, how much? And he said, 4,000. I said, right, that sounds steep, but, you know, if you tell me it's going to run, let's have a look at it. He brought it around one night, and God, this is a terribly boring story for your listeners. But yeah, so I bought the van off him anyway, and I've been slowly doing it up, and I've got a little solar panel in the front to make it more eco-friendly. That's right, girls, it's eco-friendly.
Nice.
And a spare battery in the back. And yeah, it's I would say it's fairly comfortable. But what I really mean is it's extraordinarily comfortable.
And that's not going
to have your house with you wherever you go.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're not paying for lodging either. So it's better for the budget, right?
Well, you would think so. You would think so. I mean, this is the problem. This is the sort of post-60s, post-Jack Kerouac idea that we have as travelers, is that you can do that. You can just go and buy a van and just pull up by the side of the road, and you and your friend can just sleep in it and then worry about showers later. It's not entirely like that. I'd love to say it is, but here's the deal with the way the sort of world's run and bureaucracy and all those sort of things. They've legislated against the dream. You can't really do that. You do have to pay for places because they've got these signs everywhere saying no camper vans. You know, it's a bit of a sore subject for me because I've always been a big fan of 60s camper culture. You know, on the road and those sort of things. But you just can't do that. It's unfortunate. You've got to kind of, and you can't do that on two levels because you can't do it legally, but you can't do it in the sense that at the moment I'm traveling on my own. And if I'm going to meet people or continue to network or sort of have fun with other travelers, you do kind of have to stay in hostels now and again, you know?
Yeah.
Because everybody gets lonely. It doesn't matter who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, you know, the best kind of hostels run by the best kind of people will let you pull over for $10, $15 a night and have a shower and use the kitchen and meet people, hang out, drink and have fun and all the normal things you would do. But then you can just sleep in your van.
Right.
Of which you intended to, but a lot of places, it's all become about the money. That this, like I say, they've legislated against the dream a little bit.
I am a little disappointed to hear that because you know that's kind of a bust to the budget. I mean, it just buying your own van and then still having to pay for stuff like that is kind of a bummer. But at the same time, I agree that networking is really important, and you do get lonely, and being with people is. Obviously the answer to that, and like we were saying before, you never know who you're going to meet, and you definitely want to put yourself into situations where you're going to be open to that. And so I guess it can be a good thing too.
Well, yeah. And through sort of networking, I mean, your networking skills, exponentially increase while you travel.
Definitely.
Say for example, at the moment I'm just staying with a friend. I'm parked on their lawn and, they haven't told me to get off of the shotgun yet. So I'm going to continue to do that while I make a little bit of cash to move on. So
yeah.
thanks to Dell for that.
That's a good plan. Yeah. So, okay. We need to wrap it up a little bit here because we've been going on half an hour already, but I have, one last question for you that I think in a way you've spoken to a lot already, but what advice would you give someone considering long-term travel who might doubt that they could afford it? What would you say to them?
I previously mentioned about not really having a budget. You do need to save a little bit is what I call a contingency budget. So this is how I do it personally. I take it this was kind of what the podcast was about. My budget, I don't have one as such, but I do have what you call a contingency budget. I'll only get to about $1,000 before I start looking for a job, and that gives you enough money and enough time to prepare yourself for where you want to work. You know, a lot of people find themselves in a position where they're stuck in a town they didn't initially want to be in because they got down to the last $30 and spent it on a pizza, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to be sensible. It's not about just leaving home and not considering what you're doing. I think that's a very romantic, naive way to look at travel. You are out here on your own, or generally on your own, and you do need to be sensible to some extent. Obviously, taking risks is part of the fun, but I'd say, as I said before, a visa and a plane ticket and a little bit of contingency budget are enough to get you going. You don't need to be a millionaire to travel, you know. In fact, I very rarely have a lot of money, you know. But it's what you do with it. That's the most important thing. I spend everything. I spend absolutely everything. But I gain absolutely everything as well, to put it that way, which is obvious. So don't worry so much about having a lot of money when you leave home. Buy a plane ticket because that's the hardest part.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest part is just getting on the plane, you know. Everything else should be right.
Yeah. I mean, leaving everything behind tends to be the biggest step. And then once you get going, everything just starts, you know, making sense and everything works. And actually, you mentioned the budget. I don't know why I'm having a hard time saying that, but we do that at home too, basically. Like there's just kind of a minimum line that when we get there, it's like, okay, you know, we really need to make some more money before we travel again. And it's time to buckle down and start, you know, cutting off our extra spending. And that way we can build that back up and then we're free to take another trip. I think that's
for sure.
Kind of what you're talking about.
I got thinking about budget when you asked me to do this sort of interview and I sort of sat down and realized that my budget's kind of, it's quite different to a lot of backpackers in the sense that I don't skimp on food and drink. A lot of backpackers live on noodles and very cheap boxed wine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that kind of defeats my personal ethos when I travel. And that's, you do experience a country through its most common things, not its most outrageous things. Like a lot of people in New Zealand here are jumping out of planes or off bridges or, you know, those sort of things. But that's not New Zealand, you know. New Zealand's through its food and drink and, for example, if you think of Italy, the thing that most people think of unless they've been is pizza and pasta and, mm-hmm. And grappa and limoncello and things like that. So for me, I don't skimp on food and drink. That is a huge part of my budget, and I'll literally spend on it. But I will cut back on other things to keep that up. But that's my thing. That's my thing. And I'd never sort of tell anybody to travel on that budget if it's not for them, because each person's travel experiences is of their own, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point because, I mean, everybody's going to have their thing. And I also really enjoy food, but there is an extent to where I refuse to pay too much. Like at a nice, you know, restaurant, I don't really go to nice restaurants, but I love finding hole-in-the-wall places, and food is a huge part of culture. And so I agree with you.
You don't have to spend a lot of money on one particular meal, you know, but if I have three interesting meals a day, I won't mind that being part of my travel budget. And for example, just last night, $70 I spent on cocktails, which would make most backpackers blush or pass out, you know, in terms of their budget. But for me, I'm sort of on a big learning curve in terms of learning cocktails to open my own venue at some point in life, hopefully. For me, to try these things around the world is a huge sort of point for me, you know. Each country I go to, even if it costs me that much, I'd like to try them and see new techniques and learn and things like that, you know. So to go back a little bit, what I find sort of irritating about travel preferences on you know, oh, you've got to do this, you have to do that, why did you do this, why have you spent so much time here, and they're missing for me what is the point, and that is, it's your travel experience. You know, for example, Queenstown here in New Zealand, every single backpacker is heading to Queenstown for the winter. You know, every time you ask someone, it's Queenstown. But I'd never tell them not to go to Queenstown. You know, I'd never sort of like... And sometimes you feel a bit affronted because they've questioned your entire travel mentality, you know? And I just say to people, chill out a little bit, you know? Travel on your own thing, you know? And let other people do theirs, because we're all on this conveyor belt together, but we're all taking our time, you know?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
My little rant about that anyway.
It's one of the good things about traveling alone, too, is... What I'm hearing from you, you know, and you can make it whatever you want it to be, when you are alone, or, you know, if you have just that one person with you, it's easier to make it your own. And that's what everybody's out to do, I guess, when you're traveling anyway. So,
yeah, well, you're never truly alone when you travel. You're always with somebody or surrounded by a few people, you know,
this is true.
Like my mom said to me before I left, you know, you only have 24 hours away from home, and it makes the world a really small place when you think of it that way, you know?
I haven't actually thought about that really before, but you're also, it's 24 hours and it's also an expensive plane ticket, which that could be a different kind of, you know, brick wall in front of
you. You've got to have your contingency budget.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But yeah, I always love to say, you know, you aren't alone when you travel, even if you go by yourself. You know, I mean, Nate was just asking me today, what do you do when you're alone? You know, talking about a trip I took years ago. And I said, well, I wasn't ever
anything
really alone.
You want to do.
Yeah. I mean, and on like a 3-month trip, I was with people almost all the time. I could count like 2 days where I actually was by myself and didn't really talk to anybody else. You know, it's like 2 days out of 3 months is nothing. So anyway, back to the subject. Thank you so much for this conversation. I think that people are really going to get a lot out of it. And I love the perspective that you've brought to this. And I think it's really relevant to...
Thanks very much for having me. And hopefully people will understand my accent. I've tried to tone it down. One thing I deal with a lot when I'm traveling is people not understanding what I'm saying. So,
yeah, hopefully they do, because you've had a lot of good things to say. So, I know you don't blog, do you?
I have done a few blogs on a friend's website, and maybe I can plug that for her, because she's an aspiring writer and she's very, very good. And she's been very kind to me hosting a few of my opinion pieces. I'm not entirely sure of the web link, but if you just type into to your search engine, Traveling Helga, so that's traveling is in the word traveling, as we all do, and Helga, H-E-L-G-A, and her pieces are great, and she's done a lot of the South Pacific and a few awesome places that I haven't been to just yet, and my pieces are on there as guest posts, so you can find me, Neil Brown, K-N-E-A-L-E, Brown, just like the colour. I'm also on Twitter if you want to follow, and it's been nice chatting, so thanks very much, Jackie.
Yeah, and on Twitter, you are Neil Brown, right? Your name?
Yeah, straight up, at Neil Brown.
Okay, and it's K-N-E-A-L-E-B-R-O-W-N, yeah, for those of you who want to follow Neil on Twitter. So, yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, and we will we'll see you around. See you in Montana, hey?
Yeah, sounds great.
All right, cool. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
See you soon. Thanks, bye.
You know, in a way, I hated to end that interview. I feel like he had so much to share, and he's so good at capturing experiences and feelings in words. I might just have to have him on again someday to let us know how his travels are progressing and what else he's learned as he's traveled more and more of the world. Anyway, I'm hoping that you find Neil's advice and input as inspiring and encouraging as I do. He made a lot of good points and didn't put a lot of extra foo-foo stuff into making long-term travel a lifestyle. He simply made it a decision and off he went. And I think that one of the biggest takeaways from this conversation is that long-term travel isn't as hard or as unattainable as a lot of people think it is. That by putting just a few things in motion, it can be possible for those who want to experience it. And when he mentioned that everyone can have this experience, he is absolutely right. It's just a decision and a plane ticket. And I've posted a couple of links on the show notes page on my website to his guest posts on the Traveling Helga blog that he mentioned. And you can find those and some other great one-liners to take away from this episode at thebudgetmindedtraveler.com/6. And remember, that's the number 6 for episode 6. And in wrapping up for today, there's just one more thing I wanted to mention, and that is if you are interested in long-term travel, even if it's not years at a time, you know, you can go for a month or two to start out and see how it goes, or try 6 months somewhere. But I want to say that if you still have a lot of questions about the logistics of it, you may consider picking up my book, The Aspiring Traveler's Handbook, which you can get from my website at thebudgetmindedtraveler.com/book. Because it will help you through each step of preparing for an international trip, from choosing where to go, to getting a plane ticket, to budgeting, packing, being safe abroad, and even what to do with your stuff at home and your cell phone and everything. It's loaded with practical information that's meant to help newer travelers get their traveling feet under them. So definitely check that out if it's something you're interested in. And again, that's The Aspiring Traveler's Handbook. And you can find it at thebudgetmindedtraveler.com/book. And with that said, it's time for me to go catch another local baseball game here in Pescadero. My husband and I are missing baseball in the States, so this is our baseball fix for the next couple weeks till we go home for summer. So I'm off. Thanks again to Neil for your willingness to come on and share your thoughts with everyone. And I hope this has been helpful to those of you considering long-term travel now or in the future. And remember, a plane ticket and a contingency budget is all you need. The rest will work itself out. Happy daydreaming. See you later.